How to Say Goodbye is a multimedia event and love letter to music. People were asked to pick a favorite song and to make an audio recording reading the lyrics. The Lyric Project then made a film based on 10 songs. Again, that's The Lyric Project Season 2, How to Say Goodbye, on Monday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the Star Theater, 13 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBU is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBU are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBU has been showing up for over 50 years.
Give to KBU today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give
or call 503-231-8032.
Support KBU,
where music makes the movement.
Hello, everyone. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. You are listening to The Struggle on KBU Community Radio. We're a show that tries to link you with local organizers who are doing good work in the community, to tell you how they came to the work, what's important about the work, and why you actually might want to support it. So today I'm with Brooklyn Clark and Nico Serra.
Hey.
Hi.
So we just came from the Won't Be Erased protest outside of City Hall. This is important on so many levels, not just because of us coming together, finally, not because someone got killed, mm-hmm. which seems like the only time that we have any sort of outward-facing trans activism.
Right.
So that's one piece. But also, this week, Mayor Wheeler's proposal to only have protests, particularly at City Hall, be when you get a permit from him. And he lost. Mm-hmm. And this was the first action in town and at City Hall as a tee-hee-hee to you for trying to step on our First Amendment rights.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does it feel?
Oh, man.
Feels good.
It was so good. It was so good. Wasn't sure how that was going to come down. I have to tell you, I was really surprised about Nick Fish and glad that he voted with Amanda and Chloe on that to defeat that measure. And had some good things to say about it, too. Called out the Proud Boys, called out the white supremacists, called out, you know, the fascists and whatnot. And I was nervous getting ready to come on to Friday, not knowing how that was going to turn out. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad it turned out the way it did. And we had a wonderful event over at City Hall tonight. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Sure. My thoughts on that is that we have to vote. You know, I think that it's important to get the right people into office so that our voices can be heard. And I think it's important for us to hit the streets so that they can hear us, and especially in front of City Hall, right, take it to his office, mm-hmm. you know. But I think it's definitely important for us to exercise those First Amendment rights. It's important for us to participate in the democratic system. You know, we can like complain in our living rooms amongst our friends, but it's more important to get on the streets, to put in our ballot, to let Mayor Wheeler know that we want change. We want laws to change. We want equal protection. You know, that we don't want anything that anybody else doesn't have. We just want to be treated equally.
Yeah, and clearly we've got one group who's stashing rifles and guns up on top of roofs, and then we've got other people who are dragging bodies out when people start getting hit.
Yes.
You know, and it's, you know, I hear I'm around a lot of people who are what I call centrists and stuff, and they express fear about kids dressed in black and masks and things like that. And I always tell them, I thank my lucky stars for them, because they're the ones that drag us out when things get ugly. Yeah. I'm so grateful things turned out the way they did.
Yeah, certainly trans people are under attack. I want to provide a little bit of background for people who are listening right now before we jump into a little bit about your two, your histories and how you came to this work. So a few weeks ago, Trump released a memo, a White House memo that would essentially erase transgender as a legal category. So if it were to be adopted and put into legislation, what that would mean is that that trans people would cease to be recognized as such. As by this memo, gender is something that is immutable, unchangeable, and determined by genitals at birth, I think, is actually. This is the background where a lot of the resistance against Trump springs in a trans frame as of late. And the cohesion piece has not yet come to bear. There's not a national fight back that's been coordinated. So a lot of the action has been sort of just dispersed randomly through the country. So we want to give a little bit of the lay of the trans activist land in Portland. So if we could just start, Nico, and then Brooklyn, if you could talk a little bit about your histories, however you feel comfortable, and how you come to this work, please. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, gosh, where to start?
And I should say we're three trans people, in case people are wondering. Okay, excellent.
We're on the radio, so you can't see what's up. unless you're tuning in, Alyssa is streaming this on your video stream.
Yeah, so Alyssa Pariah on Facebook. I just don't want a shameless plug on the radio. I don't know. Okay. Yeah,
if you want to see what's happening. I'm a light-skinned person of color. I use a wheelchair. I'm transgender. I'm transmasculine. I do also identify as non-binary. Let's see where to start with this. Maybe I'll go backwards. I've been really diving in. There's a lot of work around transgender awareness this month, and a lot of support around the trans community this month, because this month we have the Trans Day of Remembrance every year. And I have to be honest, the Trans Day of Remembrance is a tough thing for me to go to and actually attend every year, because it's essentially a funeral. Mm-hmm. where we speak the names and say the names of all those who have been murdered that we know of. And when I say that we know of, there are a lot of trans people who we never even hear about, because we don't get categorized, don't get counted in many ways. So this month has been super busy. We're responding to the memo. We're as Alyssa was saying and Brooklyn were saying about where we're essentially institutionally, they want to institutionally eradicate us. Mm-hmm. The effects will first come down in healthcare and in education.
No doubt.
Those are the places where people will be affected the most. And I think that just like so many situations, like Trump went into office and everybody was like, oh my gosh, immigrants are getting picked up from the courthouse, oh my gosh, and the immigrant community was saying, hello, this has already been happening for years. So coming from my perspective, I've got a lot of health issues, and so I've already been experiencing a lot of issues and discrimination around getting health care. And not just like I couldn't get my hormones and things like that, like I needed to get a wrist surgery, and then the surgeon found out I'm trans, and then all of a sudden they can't work on my wrist.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Filing complaints or not filing complaints because I'm scared, because I don't know if it's going to affect other things and things like that. So So these things are already happening. I'm already hearing about friends who are out of the country or who are having a hard time getting back in, or people who are having a hard time getting their passports. And
it's already happening.
Yeah, it's already happening. So you know, looking at the response and what we're doing as community and how we can build up and what together. Let's see. I guess more into my history. Is that where we wanted to go with this? So
that's all right. Your heart is full. Let it
I know
spill
there's
out.
So many things.
Let
right?
it spill out. And the show was an hour.
All right, we got time. Okay, cool. Let's see. Let's start from coming to Portland. So I moved to Portland in 2010, and like 6 weeks after I got here, I was riding my bicycle and I got hit by a car and I was dragged around a corner.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. And it was right at the beginning of my transition. In fact, it was right before I started my medical transition. So I was already using male pronouns. Everybody was already seeing me and saying he, and there was no discrepancies there. But what a lot of us deal with is that we don't have our paperwork done. We don't have, you know, all of the other things that happen with transition. So paperwork is a big one. Mm-hmm. So I immediately didn't start getting the care I needed. The paramedics misdiagnosed me from the scene. They were calling me he, and I knew my paperwork didn't say that, so I didn't want to go to the hospital. I knew I didn't have insurance. I had a concussion.
Here we
so
go.
I wasn't thinking right, you know, so I didn't go to the hospital. And it just turned into
the indignity
into,
of poverty. Sorry.
Yes.
Assuming you're not worthy.
And,
okay.
Yes, and thank you for bringing in the class warfare part of this because that is what unites so many of us, right? Whether or not you're transgender, so many people who are listening to this show in solidarity can unite with us in this struggle, because we are
economically
oppressed.
Among the poorest
people
in the world.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my family had already at that point essentially turned their back on me and said, oh, you've lost your mind. You think you're this and you're not. Didn't want to have anything to do with me. I didn't hardly know anybody here. And it was a mess right from the get-go. And it was before the Affordable Care Act passed. And I was just out to lunch with it. So the only reason I got through that was because there were other trans people, other poor trans people who showed up and carried me through it.
Wow.
And I survived it, and now use, you know, without getting into all the details, now get into using this collection of sad stories to do something with it. So I do a lot of what I call healthcare activist work.
Sure.
And I get in there and call out these insurance companies and say,
whoa,
you know what? What the heck? How can you, who know nothing about the human body, tell me and my doctor that you think I shouldn't have this medication twice a day? You don't even know about the body. So why do you get to tell me that I can't have it? And why do you get to tell my doctor and my pharmacist that I don't get to have it? They went to school for however many years to learn this stuff. So that's fun, you know, showing up at the ritzy things with the politicians and the healthcare insurance people and calling them out on this stuff, because
thank you.
And I will tell you, there's room for more people to join in that struggle, because it's effective. Now my prior authorizations are going through a lot
they might
easier.
Not let you back in now since you've outed yourself as a radical.
Well, I'm just going to keep showing up, and I'm just going to keep bringing more people, because I can tell you that the more of us that show up and the more of us that push on is, I mean, some of these people pull me into the side room and they're like, keep showing up and keep bringing your friends.
Okay.
Because they know it's a racket too.
Okay.
So I do a lot of healthcare activist work because of the stuff that I've lived through. And I also do a lot of work around housing, because so many of us are struggling with day-to-day needs, and a lot of it is around housing and our basic needs. So especially for people with disabilities, you know, I talk about how hard it is to find housing in the city of Portland anyway. Now figure out where you gotta go if you've gotta have a wheelchair accessible place. And if you're on a Social Security budget, which is usually $600 or $700 or less a month. If you even win your Social Security case, which for me, it took 5 years, and I had to get my congressman involved to get my Social Security case through. So, I don't know. That's like a brief history of the last. Oh, I was a Bernie delegate in 2016, and that's kind of
cue applause.
No shade. That's no shade. Meant. That's no shade. Meant, right? I'm sorry.
No, no, no.
Maybe we should talk about shade in the trans community. Sorry about that.
No, no. Yeah, right. Right. No, we're poking at each other in good faith.
In love.
Here. In love. Yes, love. Yes. So that's when Alyssa and I met. And I had kind of seen her from afar at Don't Shoot Portland events. And I was just like, oh my gosh, who is this person? Yeah. She's amazing. So I got to meet Greg McKelvey and some other really amazing activists doing that, and that was really when I started to get back in, because the first 5 years I spent in Portland, I was really all consumed with just dealing with my health and dealing with housing and dealing with how are we going to pay for the heat this month and rent and all that kind of stuff. And in the last couple of years, I've been blessed to be able to come out of my shell. I've had enough support and resources in my life to be able to spread my wings a little bit and get out there and start doing gigs like this and going to City Hall and speaking and all of the things. So
yes,
I'll check from there.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. So Brooklyn, I want you to know that you have a full 10 minutes to do your intro. So take as long as you need to.
Thank you.
I just want to know if you can talk a little bit about your history and how you came to this work.
Sure. I'm a little bit more concise, but...
Oh, and again, the shade of it all, darling.
The shade with love.
I love it. I'm just trying to explain myself, right? I'm not saying anything about you, Nico. I love you, and I think you're awesome.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the work you do.
Thank you.
So some of my background is that I'm a melanated person. I have brown skin. I'm a transgender woman. I'm also a single parent. I raise... a teenager during the school year. I get the summers off, so that's pretty awesome.
Yes.
I am also an Army veteran, and I have a legal background. So what always rings in my head is clear, correct, concise.
Mm.
You know, that's what I learned in my college days. I'm a Portland transplant from New York. Since moving here to Oregon, to Portland, I facilitated a transgender women's group for a while. Me and you, we organized an employment rally at the Bureau of Labor and Industries for transgender employment. What happened there? That was very interesting. You know, what happened there was that... the commissioner at the time, I think that person has been voted out, so that, again, why it's so important for us to vote, said that everything was fine, that we're getting equality in the workplace, mm-hmm. and that there's no work for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's still more work for us in the transgender community to build with our allies and our friends to make sure that we have equal opportunities for employment.
Mm-hmm.
We touched on the poverty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something else that I've been working with is the Community Alliance for Tenants.
Mm-hmm.
Nico,
nice.
You talked on the housing part.
Yeah.
It's really hard to
it's
even
central.
Have a job. It's central.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without stable housing and permanent housing.
Right.
And so many times it's you know, it's a snowball effect, you know, no housing, no employment, you know, it ties into the health, you know, the mental health aspect of
Absolutely.
It. So many
if you
things.
If you don't have housing,
know,
I mean, it feels like you don't have anything.
Anything, you know, you don't feel safe, you know, it really gets primal where you're like, I just need a warm place to be safe at night.
Well, and even if you have the best healthcare in the world, if you don't have a place to go to at the end of the night, it doesn't even matter.
Doesn't matter, yeah. Who's going to take their medicine on time?
Housing is healthcare.
Housing is healthcare.
Oh, hello.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Healthcare for all Oregon.
Healthcare for all Oregon.
You might want to use that as your next tagline.
Hey.
Okay, I'll tag them on the live stream. Okay. Wow.
HCAO.org.
Thank you. Okay.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the Medicare for All fight nationally.
That's right. That's right.
Before we jump in, should we talk a little bit about Medicare for All?
Let's talk about it.
I'm excited about whether or not some self-proclaimed progressives, right, are going to be coming into power now in the House and the Senate and, you know, all over the country and governor houses and all. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to seeing if they bring Medicare for All, which is the most popular piece of legislation in the country, championed by the most popular politician in the country. Right, self-proclaimed socialist, Bernie Sanders. Bernie. Right, your guy. You know,
again, Nico Serra was a Bernie delegate from Oregon. Please, everyone, clap.
thank you.
Okay.
So I look forward to seeing if they're going to champion Medicare for All. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, what do you?
Yeah, I'm right now looking for a screenshot because there was this pretty epic statistic that was actually taken from Fox News, and Friends. Oh, I can't find it
Friends.
Right now.
Friends. Oh.
Yeah, Fox and Friends. So they actually, they pulled their viewers.
Yeah.
And they found it. Oh, here it is. Okay. Here we go. Fox and Friends. This is from July 30th, 2018. Bernie Sanders, Medicare for All, estimated to cost... bill estimated to cost $32.6 trillion, new studies say. Would the benefits outweigh the cost? 73% of Fox and Friends viewers said yes. Mm-hmm. And to me, we're talking about really pretty conservative folks mm-hmm. there. So I feel like the tides have turned.
Okay.
People are demanding health care for all.
Okay.
And it's time. It's absolutely time. And looking at now, how do we get there? Mm-hmm. I think everybody, for the most part, agrees that it's time to do it. It's now it's going to be like which piece and how.
Right? Okay.
You know, Nico, it was interesting because I'm have that legal background and some like one of those little pointy head paralegal.
Hey, thank you. Yes.
Somebody hired this woman as a paralegal.
Yes.
So, okay. So yes. Let's get some trans and racial justice in these law firms.
Heck yeah.
So what's interesting actually is that these people do want health care, right? But the young people aren't voting. You know, something like 30% of young people, you know, that are able to vote voted. If the other 70% would vote, we would have our health care. We would have our minimum wage. We have to vote, young people. And so mm-hmm. that's really important. You know, mm-hmm. right now, talking about health care, we were talking about the Senate versus the House of Representatives. We did a good job in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, I think they have 54 members. And Mitch McConnell, boo, mm-hmm. you know, once that's his first line of business with Trump, to take away our health care.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, really important, young people, that we vote. And we write to our politicians, we call our politicians, we put the right people in. When they mess up, we kick them out. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to, you mm-hmm. know. And so I'm really happy that Joanne Hardesty is here in the city.
Yes.
She's going to work hard for us. She's going to help mm-hmm. us with our housing issues that we're having here.
Or else.
No, I'm just kidding, Joanne. I'm just kidding. Joanne, I'm just
Love
kidding.
You, Joanne.
I know Joanne's listening. No, I'm just kidding.
She's got her back. She's got her back. Yes.
But yeah. Ted is another story.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah. Okay. But I think you're right. And I actually went on to the Secretary of State's website today just because I was like, I wonder how many ballots they've counted. And it was like 67% of the ballots have been counted. And I think it's like 2.5 million eligible voters in Oregon. And there were like almost 2 million ballots turned in.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty darn good. Now, in Oregon, we vote by mail here. It's like, mm-hmm. come on now. You sure. know, most people vote here,
yeah,
which is sure. great. And I don't think we deal with, you know, the same kind of gerrymandering and the shutting down of the machines. I mean, look at what they're dealing with.
No, we do mail-in.
Right, look at what they're dealing with.
Thank you, United States Postal Service.
Right, right.
The National Association of Letter Carriers.
Yeah.
NALC, baby.
you know, look at what they're dealing with. Andrew Gillum's race down in Stacey Abrams' race down in Georgia.
Time's up. Before we go there, I think we should stay right here in this state.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and so, again, even if you cut that statistic down and say, well, If you're saying 2 million and something, how many of that something is under 30 mm-hmm. year olds, and what percentage of the under 30 year olds voted? Mm-hmm. You know, and we have these conversations in the coffee shop or at the bar, mm-hmm. you know, about our politics or our philosophies or whatnot, but we forget that Oregon is not a blue state. Mm-hmm. Kate Brown you know, basically barely pull this one off, you know, and in this state, you know, with the power that this I-5 corridor has, we should have taken that handily.
Yeah.
We have to let our politicians know we have to vote. Young people have to vote. We have to let our voices be heard. That's why I love Alyssa Pariah. She's always on the streets.
Amazing.
She's always letting people know what's on her mind, you know, and she's fighting for us to have equality. It's, you know, we're not asking for much. We just want to have an equal shake as everybody else. We want a safe place to live, to raise our families. I'm a single parent. I just want my kid, you know, if
your daughter, Heaven, she's so beautiful.
She's beautiful. Mm-hmm. She's a high schooler, you know, and right now, unfortunately, you know, we're without housing, you know, permanent housing. And what's that doing for her ability to focus on high school? You know, I want her to get to college. Mm-hmm. How's she going to be able to focus on high school when, you know, we're in a hotel? And this week, you know, the Wi-Fi is out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not in my ability. I can't do anything about it. We can use my hotspot as much as possible. That's just going to cause more poverty. And then there you go. You got the snowball effect. Yeah. Because if I keep using my hotspot, then I get a big old bill on my cell phone that I can't afford to do. And it's just, you know, and then what do you do? Mm-hmm. Sex work and other things. And it's just, it's a slippery slope. So we really have to, we have to band together. Mm-hmm. We have to let people know. We have to talk to our family members, mm-hmm. you know, to let them know. Those aren't always easy conversations.
Sure.
You know, we have to go back to Boley and let them know that we want to work.
Yeah.
You know, we have
sounds
to,
good.
We got to do
that
the Star
like
House.
That's an organizing opportunity.
That's an organizing mm-hmm. opportunity.
We should talk
you know?
About organizing.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, go on, Brooklyn.
Well, we're talking about this Trump memo and how he's trying to define us out and how he's narrowly trying to define gender as biological and determined by genitalia. Mm-hmm. I think the first question is, why is he trying to do this? Why do you think?
Why do I think
he's trying to change the definition of gender? This White House memo.
Yeah, well, I think that more than anything, the memo, as with so much of Trump's incendiary comments, are less about a political plan to carry something out legally mm-hmm. Or legislatively, mm-hmm. but in order to throw red meat to his base.
Mm-hmm.
The right-wingers who have illusions in Trump, they want a return on their investment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, white nationalists showed up and showed out for Trump. And
the smartest ones
of them know that Trump is a sellout.
Right.
They don't actually believe in him. You know, they critically support him. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was gonna say in a Leninist sense, but not they don't believe in Lenin. But we're not gonna get there. But you know, that critical support of Trump. They know that he's a mover and a shaker from Manhattan. That gets by on cheating people out of their money.
Yeah.
They know he's a charlatan.
Yeah.
But what they banked on and what they are getting is Trump launching hateful rhetoric that normalizes violence against marginalized people.
Can I challenge you one second? Yeah. And this is a conversation that me and my beautiful daughter have. Mm. Is the president of the United States a racist, a bigot? Is that even a question?
Not to me.
Not to me either.
Not to me.
And so if he is this person, why becomes a little bit easier? Why is he doing this? Because he is a racist, a white nationalist, a white supremacist. And so if we understand that, then, you know, we can't reason with him. He's not going to reason with us. You know, in the Oval Office, he has Andrew Jackson. That's his idol.
Yeah.
You see?
Indian killer.
Yeah,
that's
the White House
that was
memo.
His nickname. That was. I'm sorry. Just
no,
want
no,
to say,
that's true.
For the, no, I just want to say for the people listening.
Yeah.
Because not everybody knows what we know.
Andrew
so we
Jackson.
Should,
yeah.
Andrew Jackson was infamous for being a person who hated indigenous people so much and was so dedicated to white supremacy and settler colonialism mm-hmm. through a reign of terror that. They called him Indian killer.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Jackson, the person on our $20 bill, right? That's the name that the nickname that he acquired.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Trump's hero. So thank you. I just wanted to make sure everybody knows about Andrew Jackson.
I want to bring in that.
And then I want to let Brooklyn.
Go ahead, Nico, please.
Okay.
So I want to bring in this reality. I see Trump as, in a lot of ways, he's kind of the puppet guy up there.
Sure.
He's not making these policies. Yeah. It's very clear to me that the Pence and there's a lot of Hoosiers in Washington, yes, D.C. right now that are running things. And, you know, folks out there, you know, right wing, super conservative, Christian, waiting for the second coming, right, folks?
Yeah, like, and Christian supremacists.
Right, Christian supremacists, right? And I was raised in a right wing religious fundamentalist reality. And what I was taught as a child was, basically, we've got to do full throttle, blow up the stage, mess up as many things as we possibly can, because if there is enough chaos happening, Jesus will come back and save us.
Ah.
And I really feel like,
oh my God, they're like anarchist escalationists, but on the right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, it's kind of mind blowing, in some ways. So I like to talk about this is like we're all stuck in a car together, and you know, say we got Trump at the wheel, and it's like he's drinking and driving. He's got all the doors and windows locked. He's smoking. We're all stuck inside, and you know, we've got, some of us are hanging on, some of us are falling out of the trunk, some of us are getting run over by the car. And right now, they're hitting full throttle highway to heck, and they're hoping that Jesus is going to come back and save everybody. And in the meantime, we've got neoliberals who are willing to say, like, we're going to sell as many things as we can.
Yeah.
And, hey, you know, they're like, I got a seatbelt, I got a window seat.
Sure.
And I don't really care that some of y'all are getting run over and getting thrown out of the car.
Yeah.
And
can I just say quickly, I want to always raise political questions and terms that we use sometimes. Right. So we can popularize out some of the stuff that we know.
Yeah.
And neoliberal, the term that you use for people who believe in sort of the free market fundamentals. Right. That really want to return to sort of a more natural capitalism, whatever that means. I call neoliberalism capitalism getting its groove back. Essentially, what it says is that the market is supreme, and that things that used to be treated as public services should actually be private initiatives by the market.
Right.
And with that is a diet of austerity. That means the social services that you once had because people fought and struggled for, we're actually going to be taking those back. And good luck to you, right?
Right,
so the lowering of wages and the busting of unions goes hand in hand with what we might call neoliberalism. And what's very interesting is that many people who are champions of neoliberalism are, they call themselves progressives or Democrats. And many people assume that Democrat means that you sort of like fight for normal people or fight for the oppressed. But oftentimes we know that Democrats are some of the most vicious neoliberals on the planet. It's just that their version of market supremacy includes some diversity and inclusion.
Right, right. They have some of the language that they want to include some of us, right? And I think so, yeah, in the neoliberal reality that it's like liberating the market with, I think, maybe the big exceptions being the police and the military. Those still being like really like they want to throw as much.
You can't have austerity without military.
Right, right, okay. Right. So,
people,
you know,
rise up.
Yes, yeah. So, thank you for breaking that down. And I mean, I'm still kind of grappling and learning all this stuff too.
You're
so
brilliant.
I'm blushing. So, talking with everyday people about this stuff, you know, we talk about voting and things, and it's like just having a conversation with somebody at the apartment complex or at the grocery store, and they're just like, what the heck is going on? They're so confused. This stuff is so complicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm just an everyday Joe trying to do my job. Like, I don't know what's going on. How should I vote? You know, and you get into talking with them about all this stuff. And it's like, you know, so voting is part of it. And the other part of it is like what we're doing here. We're building community and we're figuring out how to come together and organize and support each other through this, because the government and the state is not going to give us everything we need.
Yeah.
Some of it we're going to have to create with each other, and some of it we might have to take.
take.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. And I want to jump in right there because you guys were talking about neoliberalism, and also, you know, kind of some of the stuff we're going to have to take. Some of the stuff we're going to have to do ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great segue into the Star House.
Yes, thank you. Oh, please talk about the Star House.
Yeah, the Star House is going to be a place where we can
give the history of the Star House.
Star House. Okay, you do that. I know. Yeah. You're such a good historian. I know it, but I think you can say it so much better than me. So
you know, we do this a lot where we have a lot of knowledge, a lot of ideas, a lot of terms, and they're not actually as popular as we think they are. It's just that we're in a bubble, right?
Yeah.
So like we gotta like think outside. So the Star House, STAR is an acronym. It means Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries. It was a communal housing that was established by trans women of color, a Puerto Rican and a black woman named Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson. They were best friends. They saw how devastating it was to be living on the street, being working or you know, working class or poor in New York City in 1969, around the time of the Stonewall riots, which, by the way, they were the two women that they say actually began to fight the police.
That's
right. Like many people think Stonewall is just like this abstract celebration of gayness. It's not. Stonewall was a riot against police violence.
Yep.
The police used to readily raid queer and trans bars and go in and arrest people, take down their names, put their names in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
They would lose their jobs. They'd be blacklisted. They'd be shunned from their families. They'd be thrown in jail for you know, wearing the wrong clothes.
Right.
And this was in New York City in 1969 in the West Village.
Yep. And targeting the trans people.
Targeting the trans people.
Yep.
Especially the people of color, because they were often the ones who had to live on the street, that were living rough.
Yep.
And not much has changed in that way. But no, Stonewall was not a celebration by some white dude with abs, you know, dancing to house music. No, Stonewall was a police rebellion against a brutality by trans women of color, actually, led them into that struggle. And like any other urban rebellion, it was because of degraded living conditions that was prolonged and enforced by police.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the Star House came out of the struggles after the Stonewall Rebellion. The Gay Liberation Front was sort of the umbrella term for a lot of the participating organizations. There were some more conservative elements like the Mattachine Society and the Daughters of Bilitis, but generally they had revolutionary politics, actually.
Mm.
And they all were in solidarity with like the People's Liberation Front. So like they were absolutely in lockstep solidarity with people from the Third World rising up against colonialism and and the Black Panther Party in the U.S.
Yes.
fighting against anti-Black racism, mm-hmm. with the Young Lords Party in New York City that were trying to assimilate into U.S. American life, being a colony, you know, sort of being brought in mass in New York City. There was all sorts of unrest. Yeah. Anyway, see, you got me started on history.
I love it. I'm learning so much right now. This is amazing.
And, you know, we want liberation. We want equality, you know?
And we
need
to know
struggle.
Our history to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. We need our history to do it, you know? And so, like...
So the Star House was a housing collective. They took over tenement housing and were able to house and feed and provide an organizing space for particularly trans women of color, sex workers who were living in poverty, but more broadly to the more wide queer and trans community as well. But that it was initiated and led by those two is very important. So that's what STAR means. And Brooklyn, take it. Speed us up to 2018.
Sure. So in 2018, we still have the same needs. You know, I think what we need and why, you know, what me and Alyssa and Nico are fighting for our trans activism is that we want and we need trans housing. We need employment. We need education. We need medical, help. You know, there's no reason why you can't get your wrist fixed because you're trans, you know. And I had an issue last week getting my passport. They wanted a doctor's note. And I was like, okay, I have a court order. Yes. I have a social security card.
Yeah.
You know, I have a birth certificate. I have a driver's license. Yeah. Why would you put any other name and any other gender on my passport when everything else, and you have a court order telling you to write my social security card in line with my, I mean, my passport in line with my social security card. So that was really, and I drove to Seattle, you know, to get this, and I had, you know, I drove to Seattle to get that, and I had to drive back, and then I had to make another ride back, and this happens every day, and it takes people a long time to get their identifications, you know, and it shouldn't be that, you know, the poverty, you know, and what do we want? We want liberation.
Yeah,
we want liberation, and so I think what with the Star House we can start to have stability within our community. A lot of what they were doing, Sylvia Rivera and Marsha P. Johnson, there were a lot of sex workers. There were a lot of young people that their parents kicked them out in the streets, and they just needed a place to sleep. You know, someplace in from the cold. They need a warm meal. You know, and so I think it'd be a really great idea for us to partner up with. Ethical partners, partners that aren't just talking to talk and want to take advantage of our transness, but people that actually want
the tokenism.
Oh, yeah, we don't want that at all. So we want to get some good partners and hopefully be able to house some people and educate some people and employ some people. And in our community, we have a lot of artists. You know, we have a lot of musicians. We have a lot of gardeners.
Incredibly talented people.
Incredibly talented people. Brilliant. So if we could house each other, we can mentor and teach each other different trades. We can employ one another. We can start businesses. We can learn real estate. We just need a little bit of help.
And opportunities.
You know, equal opportunities.
I mean, discrimination at every turn. That was the title of a study that was released a few years ago. It was the first sort of peer reviewed sociological study about trans people. Last year. And it lays out just how devastating poverty is for trans people. I just wanted to bring that in, but please finish. Thank you, Brooklyn.
So I what you're saying there too is it's so many of us when we come out, our parents and our families don't want to have anything to do with us.
Sure.
Or they'll send us a gift card on the holidays or something like that. And
or not even that.
Right? Maybe, know, I mean, it's like, I can't remember last time.
My poverty is generational.
Right. You know,
so my parents are the type that they're religious. So anything that happened to me as a result of coming out is God's wrath.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, it's God's wrath.
Yeah, I am so sorry. Yeah,
and that is how it is for a lot of people in our community.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so we need the places, we're very grateful for cable. We're very grateful for the community spaces, but we need more spaces.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and so when we lose that family, when we lose those resources, it's like I've talked to veterans, you know, who were in Vietnam and things like that, and they'll talk about when they get back here, and the biggest difference that they see is between who makes it and who doesn't is the people that have family.
Yes.
And the people that have chosen family and other people that support them through all the struggles. Mm-hmm. And when we come out as trans people, we lose those resources.
Yes.
And we have to make decisions. A lot of us have to make decisions of do I continue living as this person that I'm not? How long can I keep doing this before I off myself? Or do I go?
And a lot of us do.
And a lot of us do. And a lot of nearly all of us have attempted.
Yeah.
Myself more than once. And it's like, so we have to decide, do I do this transition and hope that it works out, or do I keep trying to live this life of misery? You know what I mean? And it's like we're kind of in these situations where we're like one or the other, you know, and it's like it's so hard. So, you know, we come to places like Portland where there are all these great people who are like, I want to help people and I care about this stuff, and they had those, you know, those cool flags in the window that are like, in our America, love wins and all this stuff, and it's like, in your America, like, hey, you got an extra bedroom? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's start figuring out how to help each other out with this, because so many of us are struggling, and the class struggle is real, and we are struggling with basic needs daily. You know, you look at the Maslow hierarchy of needs. I always talk about, because I used to be a public school teacher, and we would talk about essentially,
thank you for your work.
Thank you. So it's essentially this pyramid, and they would have these different levels, right? And on the bottom level, it's basic needs. You know, you're talking about sleep, food, water, housing, basic needs. And then you move up, and on the top level, it's self-actualization, right? But so many of us never even get off that first level every day.
Yeah, it's all survival. Right?
But so many of us somehow are so brilliant and so tenacious that we make something of ourselves anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we're these little fires, you know? Yeah. And
they knew that in ancient cultures.
Yes.
But I don't know how much you want to get into all that.
I would love to get into that. Jace Turner, shout out to Jace, Two-Spirit activist and warrior, just amazing person.
You got to say what Two-Spirit is now.
Oh, Two-Spirit. Oh, gosh. I'm like, ooh, I hope I say it right.
You have to provide context to the people.
I'm gonna define Two-Spirit the best way I know how, and please help me if I'm screwing it up here, but how I understand Two-Spirit is essentially, it's an indigenous term. I've also heard walks between is another term I've heard used. And it is not just, we'll go here. So it's someone who has embraced their masculine and their feminine side and has transcended those and has become more. And the way that Jace and other Two-Spirit and walks between folks and elders, I'm so blessed to have indigenous elders in my life to teach me about these things. And they talk about that the Two-Spirit people, the people like us, and it was not just about, gay, lesbian, or transgender. There were people that were straight. There are Two-Spirit people as well. This is not an exclusive thing. It's broader than that. I refer to it as we've got a sparkle in our eyes. And I can sometimes see this sparkle even in children, because it's not about sexuality, it's not about plumbing, it's bigger than that. And so what they taught me was that that we were these leaders, we were the teachers, we were the healers, we were the gatekeepers, the people who said who comes in and out of the communities. We were the ones that were in charge of so many important things in the community. And at some point that got flipped, and we became on the bottom.
Oh my God.
And I believe, and what I've learned from the elders is that until this is made right, I believe that humanity is led astray. Because we are still leaders.
Yeah.
We are still leading, even though we're learning, I think, in our communities not to do this, but for the most part we're in this dog eat dog. I have to step on my loved one and my neighbor's throats to fight over the scraps that the rich are willing to drop on the floor. And it's like, we're done with that.
No.
We're done with that.
Okay. Yeah, we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. Yeah. There's enough, for everyone. And
the scarcity is a myth.
Scarcity is a myth, definitely.
Yeah, the problem is greed.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Greed, and it's for me, I grew up around a lot of hoarding.
Oh.
And I look at culture and I look at money and wealth, and people are like, oh, when it's money and when it's cars and houses and stuff, we're like, no, that's success. And I'm like, are you sure it's not hoarding? Because it looks like hoarding to me. Uh-huh. It's just not garbage or clothes or beer cans or or cats or whatever. So people don't call it hoarding, but it looks like hoarding to me. Like, who needs 200 cars?
Yeah.
Who needs 4 houses? Yeah. Who needs golf courses?
Or a yacht that parks a smaller yacht.
Right.
Jeff Bezos.
Look at Jeff Bezos. Yeah, who needs all this stuff? Now they want New York City to pay for him to have a helicopter pad? Give me a break.
It's so wild. I lived in Long Island City, Queens. You know that's where Jeff Bezos is trying to, create a headquarters for Amazon.
They're in D.C.
He's going to get both. Yeah.
Yeah.
He has 2 headquarters, one in.
Well, he's already bought politicians. He's good to go. I mean, I don't know. I guess this is not about corruption in politics. But,
we're never going to get the Star
okay,
House.
I'm sorry. Okay, so the Star
so
House.
So many things to talk about, right?
So the Star House information for people who are interested is starhouseportland@gmail.com. And the number is 551-229-5530. Again, the Star House, under the leadership of Brooklyn Clark, is going to be an initiative that's going to be put forward in Portland. Hopefully it will be taken up by, some of the wonderful progressives that we have coming on to City Council. To be able to take that up on a progressive taxation basis, tax the rich. Why should we be afraid to say this? Yes. Anyway,
I think people that are listening, and we would love to partner with you if you are ethical. We don't just want anybody's money, but if we have some private partners, that'd be cool. We'd like some government partners. We'd like to work with people that want to work with us that have the best intentions, at mind. Yeah. And if they don't, we don't want to partner with you.
Thank you.
And I think, too, when we're talking with people who are coming in as allies, too, that we talk about good intentions and then there's also impact, right?
Sure.
So sometimes, somebody comes in with the best intentions, but there's this other thing called implicit bias. Mm-hmm. And implicit bias is it's your subconscious. It's the stuff that you've always heard this word used your entire life and you don't even realize, and then it slips out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh no, I just said this word and it's totally racist or ableist or classist or, whatever ism it is. So looking to work with people that we can link arms with and do this work, and people that we can say, thank you for showing up. Thank you for the work you're doing.
Uh-huh.
This word really don't work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then call each other back in and be able to work through it. Because so many times when oppressed people, when we come together to do work,
we hurt each other.
We end up cannibalizing because
we hurt each other.
It's like we go back to that car analogy. It's like we're the kids in the back seat and we're just smacking at each other because we're right there. But it's just like, hey, how are we going to work together to pull the car over?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Sure. And I think we have to stay focused on the end goal. Laser focused and say, what are we here to do?
Yeah.
And not get distracted. I think what this guy in the White House, this supremacist, he's great with the red herrings. And he is empowering terrorists, and they don't call them terrorists because
they're lone wolves.
They're non-melanated people.
Only brown people can be terrorists.
Only brown
What's
people
wrong
can
with
be
you?
Terrorists, and you so didn't that's know that? And so it's really a shame where we're at, and so. I think, America, and I'm talking to the progressives, but also the conservatives. Mm. If one is listening or two, if we have one or two out there.
Hey.
Maybe they're hate listening.
I
think some of the fash might have actually found out that I have a show. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I think that those people want their kids to be able to go to school without getting shot. I think that there's a common ground for all of us to reach, and I think that they want to party downtown without having a lot of homeless people on the sidewalk. Well, we have to have
they're not there because they want to be.
They don't want to be there.
Sure. It's not fun.
Let's not criminalize them. Let's not mistreat them. Let's figure out solutions together.
Right.
Well,
policing is ridiculous. Prevention is vital.
And so many of, we're talking about, I think, a lot of poor white people. I think, they're buying into this idea that we're taking their piece of the pie. Right? They're it's these people and these people and these people and these people. No, it's the rich people. Mm-hmm. The pie thing is a lie.
It's a lie. It's just a lie.
There's more. There's so much more. Right?
There's a bakery.
There's bakeries and there's fields. There's so much more. And we are all being told that we're supposed to be...
There's only a pie.
That there's only a pie and that we're supposed to be living these lives of misery and these spectrums of, we're sorry you have cancer, but you're just going to have to go to Walmart and walk on these cement floors and be under these fluorescent lights and work so you can get some kind of healthcare. And give me a break. while the Waltons make however much money, the richest family in the country, and this is the richest country in the history of humanity.
The Waltons, just again, you know, we gotta bring it in. The Waltons are the family that own Walmart, the global department store that regularly exploits their workers, busts up unions, do not gainfully employ everyone. Right. They will keep. Generally will keep people at part-time even if they want full-time work, and they'll just hire a lot of part-time workers. You know what Walmart is, I'm sorry. I want to give the context.
Thank you.
The family, the Waltons that you mentioned are the people that own Walmart.
And so as long as we're fighting with each other, we're not fighting the rich. And again, I'm going to tell you, I'm disabled, I'm in a wheelchair, I can't physically fight. So when I'm using this word, I'm not talking about physical violence, because I don't do that. What I'm talking about is something bigger, because there is something more for us. We can be united in this class struggle. We have so much more in common, and the rich people want to keep pitting us against each other.
Yes.
And it's a farce.
We've done it before. I mean, the history. Okay.
Yes, but you know, bring it.
The New Deal, right? That we all refer to and know and love, that brought us Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, the programs that are lifelines to many people now, establishing the minimum wage. This was all part of the New Deal, but the New Deal was not because we voted a progressive into office. FDR was not a progressive. But the power of the movement was strong enough. The socialists and the communists, the unionists, the anarchists were the radicals, right? The ones that get derided by our mayor. I'm sorry, but it's true. Again, your ordinance did not pass, Ted Wheeler's. So sorry for your loss. But, you know, the people that banged down the doors were organized enough and massive enough in number that actually they were threatening an actual revolution in this country, and looked at FDR and said, oh, yeah, remember Russia, 1917? Remember what happened to the Tsar? Mm-hmm. You and your gilded boys, right? Mm-hmm. Do you like what happened to the Tsars?
Right.
Because that's you.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So we've got some Lenin and Trotskys in our ranks, and they know how to mobilize.
Yeah.
So go ahead and blank.
Yeah.
And that's how we got the New Deal.
I think it's time to do
that's
it.
How we got because the New Deal. That's how we got the New Deal.
We need universal health care.
Yeah.
You know, we need, I don't remember what it's called, but when people have childbirth and they need time off to be with their newborn,
maternal leave for the mother
and the father,
paternal leave as well,
for both, you know. I think, you know, we're supposed to be the richest nation on the earth, but many other countries have better education. How about education?
Yeah.
You know, college.
Yeah, sure.
You know, for our people. You
Absolutely.
Know, I think it's time. And these are things that it doesn't matter if you're a blue or a red. Mm-hmm. You should say, hey, I want this for my country because I care about my country. Mm-hmm. You know, but we're not there because
they're
pitting us against each other.
It's incredible.
You know,
while they count their money.
While they count their money, and we don't know how to, we got to stick together. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
It's incredible that they've been writing checks all this time, you know? Like, those checks are bouncing. So, you know, you keep trying to whip up racism if you want to, transphobia in the case of what we're talking about tonight, any other ism and you know, bigotry that you can in order to, you know, get as many white people on your side. But that can't work forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't eat racism for dinner.
No.
So, you know, good luck. You know, I'm watching the border right now and the caravan that's coming up of people. And of course, we know it's the caravan, right? These are people that are mostly from Honduras, but other Central American countries as well. Their governments have been
abusing,
been really bad to them. But it's not that the governments just sort of came to power and they're just evil doers. Their electeds were overthrown. Their democracies were overthrown by the U.S. government. You know, CIA-backed right-wingers, you know, that were death squads in Honduras, in Nicaragua, right? Like, that's the reason that
Fast
there's
forward.
The civil unrest.
Yeah.
So
right.
Now the caravan is coming. The chickens are coming home to roost.
Yeah, right.
And Trump wants to call it an invasion.
Unbelievable.
The invasion was the CIA that we sent over to. Okay. Wow, soapbox. Well, I'm sorry.
No, I can't stop. I'm glad you're saying that. I actually wrote down a little while ago that some of the first groups of people that are arriving from the caravan are the LGBTQ people.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, what we're hearing, I saw on Democracy Now this morning, is queer and trans people who are being treated poorly by other folks in the caravan because they're queer and trans.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Cosecha and Raices. Mm. Those are the organizations that are deploying down there, particularly to help with the asylum claims of LGBT people who are being persecuted in their countries. Right. And I know that they're not going to just, you know, try to divide and only help LGBT people. Of course, these organizations are, you know, the sort of like border abolitionists, right?
Yes.
Like they know that we didn't cross the border crossed us, right? Like, but it's true. LGBT people do face a special oppression, especially where they're from, where they face violence at higher rates.
I'm so glad you said that about the border, because, you know, think about, you know, so people came over colonizing from Europe and other places, and they've been here for what, maybe 12 generations at most. And then, you know, you're looking at indigenous people who have been living here for hundreds of generations, literally drew a line in the sand and said, you don't belong here anymore.
Yeah, it's wild.
They're Native Americans.
Yeah.
By definition.
So I thank y'all for talking. I hope y'all come back and talk more about the Star House. Again, I just want to say that the email is starhouseportland@gmail.com. The phone number is 551-229-5530. And that's Star House, the Street Trans Action Revolutionaries, taking off from where Sylvia and Marsha left off. Please consider supporting them and the movement that will be necessary in order to get the funding from the rich. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank y'all so much. See y'all next week. Bye bye.
Yo.
Yo. KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide.
This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years.
Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give
or call 503-231-8032.
Support KBOO where music makes the movement.
Yo, bless up. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Plug and Play on Wednesday, November 28th at 9 p.m. It's at the Jack London.